Hey, I'm Eric Torenberg, and welcome to another episode of Maker Stories, where we explore what makes the makers, what drives them, what they're scared of, how they make sense of the world, and everything in between. This week's episode is with Jeff Atwood. Jeff is a prominent entrepreneur and programmer, having founded Stack Overflow and now Discourse. In this episode, we get deep into the weeds of building online communities. If you're interested in online communities, Jeff is one of the foremost experts. He is a fascinating guy, and I learned a ton about community dynamics in this podcast. I think you will too. All right, here's Jeff. So you see Product Hunt. You know, you've been building these test communities for a long time. What does it make you think, or what did it make you think?
I liked it. At first, I liked the design. I thought it was a really clean, simple design, which I think is, you know, something I immediately look for when I come to a web page is like, can I understand what the hell is going on here? And it was just a nice, clean design. It made it very clear what it was for and how it works. And, you know, we know the voting systems work. One of the things we saw at Stack was that we struggled with the voting system because, you know, on the one hand, it worked. You would get great answers to programming questions. But then there were also a lot of questions that would come up, like, what's the funniest comment in source code you've ever seen? You know, and that got voted up a lot. And there were some really, really funny answers. But then it begged the question of, like, what is the voting for? Why are we voting? You know, what is the purpose of all this voting? And some of that stuff drowned out the other questions on the site. So voting is really powerful, almost too powerful in some ways. Like, you have to really think about, you know, how you're letting people vote, why you're letting them vote. Yeah. To give them unlimited votes. Like, in a lot of product feedback systems, you get 3 votes. And this is like in a software system where you can't do everything. You don't have infinite people. And if you did, you have infinite communication problems trying to build anything. You have 5 people that can do N things. What are those N things going to be? And obviously, you know, opinions are going to disagree. So you basically have to put your money on the table.
Right.
A system with unlimited money is a broken system. So there's all this implied rate limiting and sort of thinking about, like, where and how much you let people do that stuff.
When it comes to all this stuff, what would you say is your core competence? Like, what are you uniquely best at?
I basically design multiplayer games for people that like to type to each other.
Interesting.
That's what I do.
And you consider Stack Exchange a multiplayer game?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a multiplayer game.
Yeah.
I've said that for a long time. And the way you design games is, first, they have to be fun. I mean, that's...
So is Product Hunt a multiplayer game?
Yeah, I think so.
Got it.
It's got enough elements. I think Cool. Anything except for the most static web pages has some game-like aspects. It's a question of, like, how much do you let the user do? What levels can they get to? You know, how many abilities do they get? How much power are you going to give the player, basically? Sometimes you give the player no agency. It's like a video game where, look, you can move left to the edge of the screen and right to the edge of the screen. Enjoy.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that's really boring. Why would I play that game? There's nothing to do. Or if you say, hey, now there's more rooms you can go to. There's things you can find there. You can combine those things in different ways. It starts to be really interesting. And people will play the game. So that's definitely the way I thought of Stack Overflow from the very beginning was, it's a game we're going to play, and I'm going to build this rule set in such a way that people do things that I think are good for them and good for the community. So the game is designed to encourage positive behaviors, cooperative style behaviors, and it's designed to discourage negative and, you know,
right,
essentially fighting behaviors, right? But there's always a blend. I mean, sometimes you want people to compete at some level, like who can give the best answer. You know, that's a good thing.
What do you understand about these multiplayer games, these communities about sharing knowledge that other people might not, who aren't as...
I think it helps to approach with the philosophy of, like, look, you know, I'm a gamer. I like to play games, and most of the interactions you have in life are not terribly different from games in a lot of ways. It's just you play a lot of games, and that's good. Games are healthy. Games are fun. It's like family board game night.
Yeah.
You know, what's wrong with that? It's time you spend with your family. And sometimes for programmers who are not, like, necessarily super socially adept, it's nice to have these rules.
Right.
Because then you have rules about how you interact with other people, which can be super complicated. Like walking up to someone on the street and going, hey, like, that's such an open-ended scenario that you're like, I don't know what to do. You know, what do I say? What do I do? So having a whole set of rules around these are the rules of the community, I think it's part of the reason Facebook was successful is that it put a lot of very strict rules around social participation, you know, and I think that made it simpler for people to connect. Like, I'm not necessarily a fan of saying you are a friend, you're not a friend. I think that's a bad decision, actually. But the systems are there to sort of guide you to have these interactions, and it brings more people online, which I think is undeniably a good thing. I'm very ambivalent about Facebook, but There's just no question. There's more people online as a result of Facebook, and that benefits me.
How does that benefit you?
Well, I want people to use Discourse. I want people to Stack Exchange. I want more people using more stuff on the internet. I guess the dystopian vision that I have is essentially America Online. If America Online had become so dominant that essentially it became Facebook, right?
Right.
Then everybody's on sort of, it's the Walmartization of the world. Everybody uses one thing. And it's just a risk. You know, you don't, and plus the internet, the beauty of the internet is that you have all these different groups talking about all these different things, and they have all have their own little places to go, you know? And if everything's so centralized that everybody goes to the same place, it, there's some pathologies there in terms of, like, who controls what you can do and say. And, you know, it's just not free in the truest sense of the word. And I think the internet is about having the freedom to let your freak flag fly, as I like to say. And Facebook's only going to tolerate so much freakiness, right? Because it's Facebook. So I think everybody should have great tools to create spaces for themselves. You know?
And do you think we have enough diversity, or is there already a Walmartization happening?
I think there's some inevitable centralization based on convenience. Like, I'm a big fan of not having 10,000 passwords and logins on websites. And that inevitably means you're trusting somebody.
Yeah.
Whether it's Google, Facebook, Twitter, somebody's going to be your single point of authentication. You'll turn on two-factor off. And they're held to, like, the 99.999 percentile standard for what you would expect. They're not going to do stupid stuff like store passwords in plain text. Like, one of the 1,000 sites you're on absolutely will, statistically, right? So it's a centralization of trust, but at a very, very high level for authentication. And you also, it's like my wallet. I have my California driver's license. I have my passport. I have multiple ways to tell you who I am. It's not like if I lose my driver's license, I stop being a person.
Right.
But that's Facebook's rule of the world, right? The way they view the world is, like, if you stop existing on Facebook, you literally cease to exist to them. Like, you don't exist. You're not a person anymore, because how could you be a person and not be on Facebook? What does that even mean, right? And I think that's a super fucked up concept, right? Like, I think if you look at Facebook's, like, sort of hubris around who they are and the way they behave, it's like they really believe that they're the center of the world, and that they basically do things because it benefits Facebook, not because the way you should do it is because it benefits the audience, the people that use Facebook, right? Facebook is all about Facebook. They don't really care about you.
You ever read The Circle?
No.
You heard about it?
I have. It's the book by
Dave Eggers. It's basically what happens when, like, a Facebook or Google takes over the world. And it's funny because they use similar languages, like, everyone's going to be connected.
I've heard of it, and I like Dave Eggers. He's a great, great writer. And I think there's definitely some risks there, and that's why I worry about companies like Uber, where it's like, you can see the people at a high level are just, like, sort of in it for themselves. Like, they don't... I really like companies, like, I'm a big fan of Tim Cook, because Tim Cook gave a speech recently where he was talking about the value of encryption, the value of privacy, you know, and that was a customer value. He's advocating for customers, and that's really what you should be doing. Not, like, is this good for Facebook? It's like, is this good for Facebook's users? And I don't know. There's definitely some selfishness there that in some of the companies, you know, everybody has pros and cons.
What's your impression of something like Quora?
Quora. I don't follow Quora too much anymore. There was a period in, 2009, 2010, when Quora was, like, sort of the darling of Silicon Valley. And TechCrunch wrote, like, I swear to God, it was an article every day about Quora. And it got so tedious for us because, like, you know, we're perceived competitors with Quora, which we kind of are, at Stack Overflow and Stack Exchange. And it was just like, I was like, just shut up about this already. It's like, we have work to do here.
Yeah.
And it was so much hype. I think that Quora came from the Facebook world, where they were like, okay, look, the social graph is where all the value comes from. And I think there's some truth, and there's definitely value in the social graph, but Stack Exchange is all about the interest graph. It's about, because I love bicycles, that's why I'm here. Because I love physics, that's why I'm here. Mm-hmm. And it's ultimately about the glorification of physics. Like, physics is gonna be here long after you and I are dead, right? And there's something glorious about working physics to the point that you're moving it forward a little bit for everyone, for the next generation, the generations to come. That's amazing, that's an amazing feeling. Whereas if you put the focus on, like, look, we love physics. That's what Stack Exchange is all about. I think it's a better end state. It's a better set of motivations. It's a better way to build and look at the world than I'm all about my little group of friends.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, friends are important. I don't mean to sound derogatory towards friends, because that would be ridiculous and crazy. But, you know, it's friends, and then there's, like, interests. Like my love of physics is honestly greater than my love of my friends at some level, because You know, that's the end state of where we're going. Or whether it's math or bias, whatever it is, you know, there's a lot of topics like this. It's like passion about the topic is what should tie you together, not, oh, that's my brother's cousin's friend, so now we have to talk.
Yeah. I mean, how did you get into this in the first place? You've been building these communities for almost a decade. You know, we went to both Discourse and Stack, but how did you get into this in the first place?
Well, the initial impulse was this site called Experts Exchange, which is Experts Sex Change, if you read it wrong. So they had a dash and a bunch of other stuff in there. And they became very dominant on the internet. Like, as a programmer, you would type some search term in, and you would get their results. And the thing that was terrible about it, and people have largely forgotten this, which I view as a huge sign of success of Stack Exchange, they've forgotten that this even existed. But you would go to the result page. It would say, here's your question. Here's the answer. It looks hidden. But you could scroll way, way, way down, and the answer would be at the bottom. They wanted you to sign up and pay and be a member and stuff to see the answer. So it was this kind of like used car sales feeling of like, oh, wow, this is sneaky. Like, I don't feel good going to this page. I'm being tricked into doing something. And Joel and I looked at that and said, this is getting great results, and we want a system like this. Q&A is clearly working, but one that feels good, where you're doing it collaboratively. It's like, wow, you know, we're peers. We learn together. That's how the programming advances, is you teach me, I teach you. We're always going to be, you know, knowing slightly different things and being slightly different levels. You know, no matter how much kung fu you have, somebody else is going to have more. That's just the way the world works. So it's really this back and forth of, like, how do you learn that we wanted to encourage, and that's what Stack Overflow became. And it did totally displace Experts Exchange. It's also a good example of what I call it. If you're really mad at something in the world and you think it's awful, one of the best approaches is, you know, don't talk about it. Just build an alternative that's better. And then you'll notice all of a sudden people start beating a trail to your new thing, and all of a sudden it's a superhighway. And then there's like a tiny little trail full of rocks, you know, off a cliff that leads to this old thing. Because people just stop going there.
Right.
And I think that's a really constructive way to sort of attack problems in the world. Now, there's problems of social justice where you have to stand up to institutions and things like that, but for products in the world, you know, don't waste your time explaining how bad everything is. I mean, it's better to just build something better and say, look, this is so much better.
What things of social justice do you care about?
I think diversity is fundamentally a plus. Like, any system that's a monoculture, like Facebook is a monoculture at some level. If everything was Facebook, that would be bad. If there were only two sodas to choose from, that would be bad. If every person on your team, you know, has exactly the same cultural outlook, that's not really good for your product, right? So I do believe diversity matters.
And when you say diversity, you mean?
I mean diversity in really a number of continuums. Age, nationality. I think having a team of all Americans is not as good as having an international team. Sex, I think gender obviously is, this is controversial, but I believe gender is the source of some of the deepest actual differences in humans that there are.
Race.
Yeah, race. And then also sort of diversity in like the background. Like you'd have a Python developer working with a Ruby developer on a project. I think that's valuable. That's why Joel and I knows for a long time that programmers who were polyglots that actually understood multiple languages tended to be better because they had multiple perspectives on the problem. They weren't like, oh, here's my hammer. Like the worst is like, well, I have to say something bad about PHP on every public thing. They have the PHP developers, I have this double claw hammer, I'm going to use it to hammer everything because PHP, man. It's on every server. It's like server herpes. Every server has it. I just know it's going to work. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's actually good. It doesn't matter if it actually makes any damn sense, but that's what we're going to use, right? And that's one of the things we're trying to get over with Discourse is it's a Ruby and JavaScript stack, and we want it to be such a killer app that people would get comfortable with the idea of deploying things that aren't server herpes, that aren't PHP and MySQL. It's like, whoa, what? You know? We want a world where there's actually better and more diverse choices in deployment as well. And it's been a challenge, I'll be honest with you, because Ruby is not a stack that was designed to be deployed. Mm-hmm. If you look at 37 signals in Basecamp, really the genesis of Ruby on Rails, they don't give a shit about deployment.
Really?
Because they don't have to. They sell a product. They don't want you to deploy it because they have a product where you pay $10. But not for us, as an open source project, we care intensely about how hard it is for people to actually deploy this on their server.
Yeah.
So you really see that in the framework when people just, you know, they don't care. And also I was surprised to find I've been asking, you know, show me some other big Ruby open source projects like Discourse. And they were like, well, there's not that many. I was like, what? There's not that many big public open source Ruby projects. And they were like, yeah, a lot of them are like commercial, you know. And that surprised me as well. So I'm happy to be pushing forward on that, on the deployment story for Ruby. We're pushing on the performance side of Ruby. There's a whole site that we helped put together, we're part of, where you sort of benchmark versions of Ruby on Rails to see if they're getting faster or slower over time, so we're not regressing in performance.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to be part of that. That's what open source is, and that's what was really missing for me at Stack, was that it was all a closed source stack. It was .NET. You know? Just because of the way that business worked, I don't think it would have actually even helped us to be open source, to be honest. But it is. It feels really good to push stuff upstream. It's a lot harder work, because you have to sort of wait for the right thing to happen, which is a lot harder than just saying, you know, tell that I'll just do it myself.
We'll get to the transition between Stack and Discourse, but first I want to say, you know, Product Hunt, as you know, we're right now in tech. We're thinking about how we expand to different categories. And you're building a playbook, you're building these rules, but we're not sure which rules will they work differently with different groups of people. How did you guys think about that at Stack Overflow?
Well, we saw that it was working great. We designed the system for programmers, right? It's like, this is a system designed to work with for programmers about programming topics. But we saw that it was working so incredibly well, and there was such diversity of the audience that we had there. It's like, well, it wouldn't be a big leap to have a site for system administrators. It wouldn't be a big leap to have a site for sort of computer enthusiasts. It weren't necessarily programmers, maybe scripters, or just people who were hardcore computer geeks. So we did that. We had what we call the Stack Overflow Trilogy. We have Stack Overflow for programmers, Server Fault for system administrators, and Super User for sort of like just, you know, hardcore computer geeks. And that worked great, and that was sort of proved that we could play the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game, where you have a programmer that knows a system administrator who knows, you know, some guy who plays video games all day who builds his own hardware, right? So I think that's a real safe game to play. You play the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game, where you go into related fields. That's safer than going completely, I don't know if you remember this, but at one point Reddit did like Lipstick, I think it was called. It was some weird like fashion thing. It was part of the Condé Nast. And I remember we did a podcast with those guys, and I was like, what is going on? Like, why would you go there? Like, that's so far afield from what Reddit is, right? But you see Reddit itself has done this natural evolution of like geeky topics, more geeky topics, slightly getting out. It just, you know, you play the Kevin Bacon game, man. You know, you slowly trail your way out, but stick to your core competencies and go to the low risk ones first, and you'll naturally get.
Have there been ones that you tried to go to that you're like, oh, can't go here, this door's closed, this just doesn't work?
Well, with Stack, it's a complicated, so Stack Exchange is a complicated game, it really, really is. And it's kind of struck me, because Discourse is a simpler system, because it's basically a table knife to the scalpel that is Discourse. So I go back to Stack now, and I'm like, I just feel overwhelmed with all the numbers and all the stuff we put on the screen, like on the user page. It's a complex game, but it's trying to do something very complicated, and it's for that particular audience of, you know, data, fact, and science. Numbers really matter. So, you know, I think the tool can be, you know, imply a certain level of skill. So I think what you got to decide for you guys is, like, how much skill does it take to use the actual tool today? Now, looking at Product Hunt, I wouldn't say it's a really high-skill tool. I don't mean that as a negative. I mean that as a positive. Like, it's essentially, people love to rate stuff. People love voting. People love, you know, doing that stuff. That's not a thing that you have trouble with people doing. Whereas on Stack, we had trouble with, like, you know, you can't, here's a list of things you can't post here. And they were like, what? You know, rules. You don't want to post anything. Now, on a book site or whatever, you would say, okay, obviously you can't post a CD here because this is a book site. But on a programming site, people might come to you and say, well, I think you should allow what's the dumbest keyword in Java topic. Because it's about programming, right? Kind of, it is. Uh-huh. It's like, what are you really going to learn from the dumbest Java keywords? I mean, it's essentially entertainment.
Yeah.
That's really the focus. It's like, where's the slider? Learning versus entertainment. You might actually learn something from that. You might learn there's some really, really dumb keywords in Java that nobody uses. But did you need to know that? Does that help you in your day-to-day job? Not really. It's like a random walk of information. And we're like, look, we're not about random walk. We're about getting shit done.
That's
we're
Reddit.
About, well, yeah, kind of. Right? And that's what Reddit is. It's a random walk. And that's fine if that's what you want. But it's much more about entertainment. Whereas we're like, look, stick to stuff that will make you better at your job. That somebody else will find useful. Right? Not my problem, but our problem. You know? So it took sort of a certain amount of effort to train people. So if we just gave it to everybody, they'd be running around with all these scalpels cutting each other. And going, oh, ow, this hurts, ow, why can't I do this, ow, why are people yelling at me? It's because you all have a bunch of scalpels. You know, you're not trained to use this tool. And it takes a little bit of training to be good with that. But once you do, you can do amazing stuff with it. I mean, I think the results obviously speak for themselves. It's sort of the incredibly high level of quality. But you don't just magically get high quality. There's effort behind that. Just like you don't just start a college and immediately start producing the best college in the world, right?
How much of that is the tech product? How much of that is the rules? How much of that is the community building or like editorial taste? You know,
I think vision matters a lot. I think one thing that helped is like me and Joel, and really primarily me because Joel was still at Fog Creek and I was doing all the product work, was explaining to people, look, this is what we're doing. This is our mission. This is how it works. This is why it's exciting. You know, you have a voice that's like explaining what's going on and saying, look, we'll be responsible. Like, you guys are involved in this. It's not all about me, but it's about, let me explain the vision, you know, of where we're going and how we're doing this. And having that really helps. And also, one thing I was super pleased about on Stack was that a lot of times on our Meta, which is our governmental site that we had, people would answer questions about how the site worked, why did it work this way, better than I could. You know, they really got it. They understood the vision, the mission, you know, why it's as strict as it is on Stack, like why this is ultimately kind of a good thing. Yeah, it's a little painful, but, you know, the pain is there for a reason because there's other kinds of pain we're trying to avoid of, like, essentially Yahoo Answers.
Yeah.
And to some extent, Quora, you know, didn't really understand that and had huge...
What didn't Quora understand?
Just essentially, you have to be kind of strict to get the kind of quality that you want. I mean, once you're allowing stuff like... I think there's still a question of Quora, like, what did Jesus's farts smell like? And I'm like, the answer is no one cares. No one cares. That's the answer. Done.
And it's because they let too many people ask questions, or they just didn't, clean up content enough, or?
Well, I don't think they taught people like what the rules were.
Yeah.
What are the rules? Who knows? In the absence of rules, it sort of degrades a little bit. Now, it could be a little bit, it could be a lot. And the Reddit model is essentially Darwinism, right? Like, you have these subreddits which can go to super dark places that are really uncomfortable to even talk about. But hey, it's okay because that's how Reddit is. No rules, man. But then they have other ones that are really good that have really, like, Ask Science that are really highly moderated where they have a very strict set of rules. And one thing I observed was that rules are at some level inevitable. Like, you can't have good systems that don't also have a good set of rules. And I don't mean initially strict and onerous, but, like, understandable rules. Simple rules, clear rules that get you where you need to be. Like, there's this, you know, anarchy, let him do whatever thing, you know, I don't know. As a life strategy, it's not great, you know?
It seems that this skill in building these systems is going to be more important in terms of, like, there's a need for these systems and people are continuing to build them. Do you see that going forward?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's a question of sort of genre. Like, there's definitely, the Q&A is its own genre. It has its own set of expectations. You ask a question, and then people attempt to answer it. So that's sort of an archetype of what you're trying to do. And with discourse, it's not so much an archetype. It's more like, type some words in a box.
And for those who don't know, the listeners who don't know discourse, explain what discourse is and what you're trying to do.
Oh, sure. So discourse is really just the table knife to Stack's scalpel. Meaning it's a safe tool, it's a tool you would have in every house because it's really, really common, where Stack is really a school, a place of learning of some kind. This is really just like a restaurant or a bar you hang out at for whatever reason. So it's a little bit more about entertainment and really where the strictness for Stack is like, is this useful? We can't allow you to post this because it's really not useful. And it's like, how dare you tell me my thing's not useful? I mean, that implies a lot of stuff. If you really think that through, it's kind of a deeper concept. And it implies strictness. Is this useful? Whereas on Discord, you say, is this illegal? As long as it's not illegal, do whatever you want.
So it's like Reddit?
And there's also some rules about like not being a jerk to other people. Like, yeah. The company is actually called Civilized Discourse Construction Kit because my idea was you open this box and you get the makings of civilization, which is like, hey, you've got to actually be nice to each other. Not just civil, but actually kind of nice. Like, that's why people are going to hang out at your bar. If everybody's a dick to you, nobody's going to stay at your bar and nobody's going to come here. It has to be fun and people have to be reasonably, not super nice, but like nice enough to each other. So that's what discourse is. It's an open source discussion platform. And our spirit animal is WordPress. The idea is WordPress built this great open source ecosystem of, you know, a free blogging software and you know, all this stuff that went with it, all the community, all the plugins, all the culture around it. We want to do the same thing for an open source discussion system, because that's the building block of really all community on the internet. Is, you know, you type some paragraphs to each other, and then somebody replies to it, and then, hey, you have a little group conversation going. An email, basically. Yeah. Email, mailing list, totally a target for discourse. So
someone tweeted the other day something like, wouldn't it be great if on the internet, before leaving a YouTube comment, there was a pop-up that came up and said, is this comment out of love or fear?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because we actually do that for new users on Discourse. The minute you start typing, I'm a big believer in what I call just-in-time behavior reinforcement. At the time you start typing, we pop up like just a little tiny bulleted list, like, hey, just, you know, remember why we're here, you know, be kind to each other. It's fine to be critical, but be critical of ideas, not people. It's not like, you suck, your idea sucks. There's a huge difference between those things, and people get it wrong all the time.
Right.
Right? The person doesn't actually suck. Their idea may suck for reasons that you will explain, but it doesn't mean that they suck, you know? So we do attempt to educate about that stuff in Discourse, and Discourse is much more of an iceberg in the sense that the visible part of the reputation system is tiny, because we didn't want it to be about, you know, who has the most posts, who, like, it just gets weird on systems of opinion where there's no right answer. It's like, well, who's the best X-Man? Well, it could be Wolverine, could be Storm. You know, how do you define, there is no objectively best X-Man. Nobody's wrong about this. So you don't want people to be, say, downvoting. Downvoting as a concept does not exist. So the reputation system is really hidden. There's a lot of stuff that goes on with trust under the hood in Discourse. It's not really visible. And then if you compare that with Stack Overflow, it's very visible. There's a number next to everybody's name. That's, you know, their reputation score. You can be right or wrong. You can be downvoted because this is objectively wrong what you said. It doesn't compile. So Discourse is mapping sort of a more common, friendlier set of Cs. I mean, if you looked on the city block that we're sitting on, for example, how many schools are on this block? Maybe one, maybe not even one. How many restaurants and bars are on this block? A lot, right? So it's a much more common online activity. And I wanted people to have something that didn't suck. Because when I came out of Stack, we had looked at forums. You know, Q&A is its own animal. And we looked at forums, but then stopped looking. So I came out of Stack, you know, 4 years later, and was like, let me look at forums again and see if they're any better. Because people are asking me, you know, a startup would come to me every now and then and say, hey, Jeff, you did Stack. What do you think about our startup? And the first thing I would say to them is like, well, why are you asking me? Why don't you ask your community what they think? Because I probably don't use your thing, right? Probably.
Yeah.
So what does your community think? What is your community telling you? They're like, oh, great idea. We'll ask our community. What should we use? And then I was like, okay, let me look at the forum software, because it's really some kind of basic forum functionality I was looking for. And none of them had evolved in 4 years since we looked. I was like, oh, that's awful. There's nothing I wouldn't be embarrassed to install on my own server.
Right.
Really, literally embarrassed. That's how bad this stuff was, right? I was like, and there's nothing good on the open source side. So I was like, we gotta fix this. I want something that people can be proud of installing, and they can create their own community. And it's like, it's gonna be awesome. You know, it's gonna be modern, it's gonna be easy to use, it's gonna be fun, it's gonna have all the cool features that Twitter and Facebook have, and it's easy to set up, right? That's what I wanted to create, and that's what didn't really exist. So I could take this and give that to that company and say, hey, look, here's this great software, it's free, you don't have to pay us anything. And you can now talk to your community and figure out what it is you guys want to do about it, right?
Yeah.
You don't need me. Well, you need me in the sense that I give you this tool. This tool will give you a better answer than I could, right? Mm-hmm. These are the people who use your stuff every day. Like, we launched a community for Imgur, for example. And, oh my God, Imgur has an amazing community. They're currently struggling with some, they started enforcing the NSFW part of their guidelines, which they're struggling with. But the community is amazing. They give them so much excellent product feedback about what Imgur should be, how it should work, you know, what's not working, what is working. And I view a lot of my job at Stack was just to listen, because I wasn't doing all the work in the system, right? I'm not sitting there typing all the programming answers on the site.
Yeah.
The other people are. They're the ones that need to be happy. And when they say, hey, Jeff, wow, it really sucks that nobody formats their code, and we have to constantly go in and edit everybody's post to format their code. Eventually, we created this really complicated set of code that tried to detect when people were posting unformatted code, because it came up so much, and it's like quality of life for people. It's like, geez, how fun is it to participate on Stack when every third post, you're like, oh, God damn it, now I have to edit this guy's post again because he didn't format his code, right? So we built tools that try to detect that and won't let you post. Like, ooh, that looks like code, sorry.
Yeah.
Try to format it, right? Like, we're not going to let this go through. And they're like, oh, God, thank you. You know, you've made our lives easier. And so much of product design to me is just this. Like, if I was at Firefox, you know, they have all these great plugins, but plugins are this big double-edged sword. It's like, if everybody's installing a plugin, really should be part of the product.
Yeah.
Like, that implies your product has a hole in it. You know, and there's a lot of stuff like this in Firefox, and I feel like they could have done a lot better job of bringing that stuff in over time. Obviously not ad blocking, that's hugely politically weird, I understand. You can't have built-in ad block in the browser and still be a business, I get that, but just quality of life stuff, they're giving you all this amazing free feedback about, here's how to make your product more awesome. And granted, a lot of it is wrong or bullshit or, you know, doesn't make sense or, you know, I want to turn this car into a truck. But 10% of that feedback is going to be amazing. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Stuff like, I didn't, hadn't even thought of it. I was like, oh my God, that's a brilliant idea, right? Why didn't we think of this years ago?
Yeah. Knowing what you know now, what would you do differently if you were starting Stack again?
The main mistake I made at Stack was, like, I didn't understand the value of meta or the value of people talking about Stack Overflow on Overflow or on Stack Overflow. My idea was, like, this is Fight Club. Nobody talks about Fight Club. Just talk about programming. We're here to do programming. I don't want to hear about the reputation system. I don't want to hear about, you know, inside baseball crap about how Stack Overflow works, because I don't care. You know, that's not why we're here. And they kept pushing. They're like, no, we need to talk about this. We need to talk about this. And finally, they were like, we're setting up a PHP BB site to do this. And finally, I was like, oh, my God. This is the straw that broke the camel's back. PHP BB. That's like the nuclear option you guys want to unleash. It's so bad. Like, you're right. We have to do this. And they were so right, because all the governance, all the leaders come out in the site that discusses the site. Now, granted, this will be a small percentage of your overall users. Most people don't care. Just like most people don't vote. Most people don't run for office. Most people don't care as long as they're walking down the street and nobody's beating them up. They don't care how the world works. But a certain percentage of people do, and those are some of your best people. Because they're actually working to make things better in the broader sense of governance of how the world works. So by not doing that, I was pushing away our best users. I was pushing away our leadership, which is insane. So one of the first, we rectified that as soon as we figured it out. And now, you know, anytime you launch a product, you've got to have the place where you discuss the place. Whether it's, you know, a Slack chat room or, you know, discourse or, you know, you can use bug tracking systems for this to some degree. As long as you have something, you know, I'm not dogmatic. I'm not like, it must be discourse. I'm just saying, if you're not talking to the leadership structure of the people using your stuff, then you're not really, you're not building the right product at that point.
Yeah.
You can't be.
Our some of our top makers, independently of us, have created their own Slack chat where they communicate with each other and build their own community and kind of, it's interesting. I mean, I'm in there just to keep tabs, but it's interesting how they've done it kind of themselves.
Yeah, so really the smart play there is to harness that and turn it into something that's collaborative.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes they need their own space that's like separate for various reasons, but to pull that in and make it sort of part of the natural flow of how your site works and how the product works.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a huge believer in this stuff. That's pretty much how I ran Stack Overflow and Stack Exchange, and it's how we do it at Discourse. You can go on Meta anytime you want, and, you know, I or someone from the core team will probably respond to you.
That's interesting. Now, you mentioned, you know, Q&A with Stack, forums with Discourse. What are other eras, either other platforms, other opportunities, or areas of the internet where you saw similar problems or similar opportunities?
Well, I think there's a couple different flavors of this, and I don't think it's all been mapped out yet. I think there's image-based communities, like 9gag, and I guess, to some extent, 4chan, that's super weird. you know, Imgur, Reddit tends to be heavily image-dominated. I think that's a thing, image-dominated communities. I mean Instagram, right? That's an image community. That's what it is. I think that's a thing. I think Slack has taught us that, you know, chat communities can be a thing. I think they all have their own unique challenges. I am really in the paragraph typing camp. Now, obviously, there's awesome image support in Discourse. I mean, you can paste, you can upload, it makes it super easy to share images. But really, it's about words, because I'm a huge fan of words, man. Like, when my kids started to talk to me, I was like, okay, now they're people. Because, you know? Like, holy crap, there's all this things going on in your brain that, like, once it starts coming out, it's like language is the best invention ever, right? I mean, pictures are great. You know, pictures worth 1,000 words and all that stuff, but language, holy crap, that is the holy grail.
Are your kids a multiplayer game, too?
Oh, yeah. But they play you, though.
Are you inventing rules for the kids and be like, why isn't this working?
it's really challenging. Kids, it's hard. If people have startups, you think that's hard. Man, you have a kid. That's way, way harder. then all this startup stuff is pretty easy compared to that. And they'll teach you a lot of stuff. That was the big surprise for me with the kids, was like, oh, I'll go in and teach them. It's like, no, they kind of teach you.
What is, because I hear people say that, and like, to me it seems like, yeah, but what do they actually teach?
Well, from the beginning, like, you know, how the fuck do arms work? Like, you stop thinking about how difficult it is to just move and, like eat, use the bathroom. Like, I know this sounds really remedial, but, like, running, walking, jumping, the look on your kid's face when they jump for the first time is like, they're, in their mind, they have just become Superman. Yeah. It's an incredible, and you forget how amazing... Really, people are, like, as animals, in relation to the animal kingdom, like, we're amazing animals in terms of what we can do and how we can affect the world. Like, shit is amazing. And kids teach you that, because to them, everything, like, oh, my God, this is amazing, right? Like, how did this even happen? You're like, what? It's just like a fire hydrant. Like, oh, God, water comes from the ground? You know, it's nice to be in touch with, like, life is like, it's just miraculous. Like, all this shit is completely miraculous. Not to get all metaphysical and stuff, but like, it really truly is. And like, we're alien life. Is there alien life? I mean, probably not, actually. If you look at all the data and stuff, the Fermi stuff.
It's like, there's data on aliens?
Well, there's a whole line of thinking about, like, if there are aliens that could be billions of years ahead of us, why haven't we heard from them? Right? Because they would be really, really, really super advanced. I mean, imagine where we'll be in a billion years, if we're even hopefully still here. Because the rate of change is really speeding up. Anyway, I didn't mean to get all metaphysical, but kids really connect you with this basically this rocket ship that we're riding into the future as a species. You know, and how incredible it all is.
So what are we even talking about? We're talking about Discord, other areas of the internet. So one is image-based communities.
Image-based communities is one... And then chat-based communities is another.
And so if you weren't doing discourse, would you be focused on one of those?
I do think that with what we found, we get a lot of natural push to do chat, which I've resisted. Because honestly, I'm not a huge fan of chat. It's necessary, it's needed, but it's super interruptive.
Yeah.
In terms of like, I'm kind of a programmer heart and I like flow and I just don't like people bothering me basically. And chat is like the ultimate, I'm going to bother you all the time tool. So it has to be really... restricted if you're using it right, or if you're just there to have fun, it doesn't matter. You have infinite time, sure, chat and text all day long, but for real time really matters. Like, we're troubleshooting some problem, it's like, yeah, that's essential. So I'm interested in it because I think chat and discussion forums have a lot of shared DNA, a lot more than I thought they did. Mm-hmm. Now in discourse, it is very real time. Like, you'll see posts come in as they arrive, you'll see topics come in as they arrive. You can use it as a real time chat system, it kind of works, but people want that presence. Is somebody here? Can I type you know, one sentence, you type another sentence? It's been surprising how much push there's been for that, and how much, once you drill into it, how much shared DNA there is. So I think we're going to start getting into some chat-like stuff more than I predicted we would.
Are you friends with Larry Sanger from Wikipedia?
No, I don't think I've ever met Larry. I've only met Jimmy once.
Because I know he's starting a Wikipedia for News-esque site, like,
oh, yeah?
News-curated. And I'm curious, like, Wikipedia just in general, like, did you learn a lot from them, or just totally different beast?
I've spoken to Wikipedia a few times. They were essentially looking for advice around their classic problem of, you know, the number of editors is really not growing. It's a hard system to get into. It's a complicated, really super complicated system. And they were really focusing on the new user experience, which I think is smart because that segregates you out of all the existing users have their old systems they can use, and new users get a better experience that's actually fundamentally different in terms of how they edit and stuff. And you can sort of sneak in new features to the new users. They get used to the new stuff, and then the old guard eventually fades away.
Right.
That's kind of what they have to do. And it's kind of scary on Wikipedia because, you know, it is a user-driven product. It's probably the ultimate user-driven product. But, like, in many ways, they're beholden to their community. Like, they're afraid of their community. Like, they can't... They get so much pushback that, like, they can't change things that they probably should. You know, like, it's bad kind of pushback of, like, right, no change ever. And Wikipedia clearly needs to evolve if it wants to survive in terms of having a vibrant, rich, diverse set of editors.
Yeah.
So they have a lot of challenges. I talked to them about that. And I've been encouraged because if you go to Wikipedia on your mobile phone and stuff, you can see they've made some changes. The mobile experience is a different experience.
What about Genius, formerly Rap Genius?
I had a little tiny interaction. One of the guys, one of the founders, I came to find out was a big fan of mine. And he thought we had beef, which Because I had said some disparate, like, there's things about the Genius organization that I think are crazy, and I just think the whole rat mentality of approaching the world, you know, isn't necessarily great. It's
but
kind
of, tell me more about that.
Well, I don't know. I was reading some things about the Genius Org, and I was just kind of sad about that. I'd have to look up the exact details, but I was like, the behavior was just unnecessarily aggressive. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's part of the rap persona. It's like, oh, we have these rap battles, and, you know, and although sometimes people told me I come across as aggressive, I don't think you should really seek that out. And I certainly don't think you should have it as a persona that you project on the world, you know. It's weird. And then, but their goal, I want to be clear, their goal of sort of adding, even at its most basic level, the lyrics side of the internet is just shit.
Yeah.
Everyone acknowledges that. So if Genius gives us a better lyrics solution for the internet, that's actually good. That's a net good to the world. Obviously, they're trying to do more than that. They want to annotate everything. I also am not a fan of annotation systems. Like, I feel like they're weird in terms of, like, the meta conversations. Like, you have a document, and you have comments about the document over here that are sort of out of bounds, like a bunch of footnotes. It's like, who wants to read footnotes all day long? It just doesn't really work for me as a system. Like, commenting systems, like Medium has a commenting system that's very much like footnotes, where you'll see highlighted parts of the text, and then you click on the right, and it sort of expands. Like, that doesn't super work for me either. Like, there's challenges there to the model that I'm not convinced are actually resolvable in terms of universal annotation systems. But I support their effort to fix the lyrics problem on the internet. I think that's great. And to the extent that their culture can evolve and change, I think it should. I think starting from the rap culture, you know, I love rap music, but culture-wise, I don't know that's great for a business.
Yeah, so I think, so you give me, what did you just say was shit? The lyrics. And so that's what I asked before, you know, Q&A forums was shit, lyrics was shit. For aspiring entrepreneurs out there, is there anything else in the internet or space you see that the incumbents are shit?
Well, I think the internet's challenge at this point is, like, there's a lot of VCs you'll talk to who think the internet is effectively dead. It's like dead man walking. Like, eventually it's like everything will be apps on your phone. I don't think this is actually technically correct, but I think that's more the challenge of, like, making sure the web is competitive with mobile. Like, one thing we added to Discourse in this release, which came out today, is notifications. So if the browser allows it and approves it, and you approve it, you can get native notifications of, like, and you guys support this, because I saw there was a Google blog entry with these product examples, and I was like, good work. But I think the web needs to be fast, it needs to be secure, and it needs to not be its own worst enemy, in the sense of, this site is loading, like, The Verge is a good example. It's like, why is The Verge the slowest site on the internet? Like, you go there, and I swear to God, I have an iPad Air 2, which is an amazing machine. It's like triple core, 2 gigs of RAM. It's like the best iOS device ever. And The Verge just cripples that device, you know, loading it in the browser. Mm-hmm. It's like, you gotta not be your own worst enemy. We gotta make, you know, it's kind of like the WordPress problem, is like, somebody installs WordPress, which works great. Then they install 50 questionable plugins, and now they have horrible experience.
Yeah.
Like, it just takes forever to load. There's all these dependencies. There's, like, backdoors and some of those plugins that we don't know about. This addiction to this sort of plugin system that's corrupting the experience for people. Or, like, ad trackers. Like, you go to the Washington Post, there's, like, 50 ad trackers. So suddenly the experience totally sucks. So I think there needs to be more discipline around having a good, consistent, competitive with mobile web experience. I think it's totally competitive.
Yeah.
Because I think what VCs don't see, and I don't know why, is that back in 1996, people said, no one will ever run Photoshop in the browser. That's completely ridiculous, right? The browser is just this completely sandbox on top of a sandbox. It's not even nearly fast enough. You always need native code. That same argument applies to mobile, where it's like, oh, we need native. It's like, well, do you? Because, you know, these devices are doubling in speed, literally doubling in speed every year. Still, PCs haven't doubled in speed in, like, a decade.
Right.
I guarantee you, if you buy a new Mac, it ain't going to be twice as fast as what you've got. But this iPad Air 2 was, in fact, nearly twice as fast as the iPad Air in front of it, which was twice as fast as the one before that. So, yeah, absolutely, you're going to be running Photoshop in the browser. I mean, that's the only way people run Photoshop now. It's probably in the browser.
Mm-hmm.
This is coming for mobile, because you have so much power and so much memory and so much speed that, you know, and the experience of, like, installing an app is still crappy. Like, the fact that I have to install an app bothers me. Like, if I want to use Uber, I would just type Uber.
Yeah.
And then I use Uber. What, I have to go through the rigmarole installing software? What is this, 1992? Do I have to go to the software store? Do I buy a CD? Put it in the tray? It's really the same thing.
Yeah.
The whole, and searching through the app store, my God, ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. This is a complete disaster. From, we've reinvented the web in a bad way.
Right.
The app stores. You know, and I'm not, for games, I think there's a huge opportunity there. Games are super native. That's the one protected category that always really has to be native. But beyond that, you know, it's a question of bleeding the device capabilities through to the browser, like notifications, location, you know, things that the device takes for standard, like shaking, even though that's right. A dumb way to do things. All that stuff, you know, getting that into the browser in a rational way over time.
If you, when you putting your VC hat on, investor hat, what types of spaces would you be looking at? Or are you looking at?
I do not put the investor hat on.
If you had to.
That is a tough job. And I'm not just saying that to butter up investors, because, man, there are so many crazy ideas out there. Like, if I was an investor, I would just constantly tell people, man, your idea's terrible, it sucks, you should be embarrassed to be here, I don't know what you're thinking. I'm not a VC. This is why, because it would be bad. It would be really bad. Because they're optimists. They're thinking, oh, this could be huge. And a lot of ideas sound crazy, right? I acknowledge that. Ideas that now, like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, Photoshop in the browser. That sounds ridiculous. But now that's totally the thing, right? Or Uber. I remember Paul Graham talking about, Airbnb. Paul Graham talking about how ridiculous they thought that idea was, right? Because you don't know. You legitimately don't know what's really, really going to be great. And there's this element of gambling to VC where it's just like, you know, probably what you guys should do is just fund everything and then just see what happens. And that's kind of what happened. Like, the seed funding is, like, out of control. There's, like, ridiculous amounts of seed funding, which is good. Entrepreneurs can try a bunch of crazy shit, and then some of it will work.
Yeah.
And I think that's the job. Find people that look promising, an idea that doesn't seem totally insane, maybe a little insane, and then say, sure, why not? Go for it.
And if it's not insane enough, then I don't know.
You
know,
it's exactly. That's boring. You know?
Meerkat, Periscope, what do you think about live video? Especially as it relates to community building. That's a challenge.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. I mean, I think there's a lot of scenarios where it can be really useful. One thing I don't like about it personally is it's so time-based. Like, you know, there needs to be some replay function, right? I miss it. I'm not there, but I want to see what happened. So, like, I want to make sure that's there. There's nothing sadder than clicking and seeing the stream not active, like Twitch. I'm not twitching right now. It's like, well, crap, you know? I don't want to be back in the old world of I got to be at home at 8 p.m. where Cheers is on, because that sucks.
Yeah.
So as long as we're disconnecting time, you're giving me a choice of things. I think more video is good. I mean, heck, look at it from a social perspective. More video of police is clearly a good thing.
Yeah.
Based on everything that's come out, it's, like, embarrassing how bad that's been for the police. Like, just making shit up. That's crazy, right? Like, so more video is good. I'm totally a fan. Just make sure it's disconnected from time so that I can get to archives or look at your top 10 things that you recorded. That's fine.
You've been in San Francisco for over 10 years?
About a decade? Since 2005, we've been in the Bay Area.
So about a decade. How has it changed culturally in ways you were either excited about or not excited about as tech has become, like, more mainstream?
I think it's mostly been really positive changes. I mean, the original bubble, I kind of was sad I missed out on the original bubble in terms of, like, I could have built something. But now I'm kind of glad I did miss out. I mean, I wouldn't complain if I was a billionaire for some stupid reason. I put radio on the internet. That was so compelling. But now everybody is on the internet. The big problem I saw then, too, was that, like, there were all these crazy schemes, like WebVan. It's like, well, everybody's on modems. You guys know that, right? Like, there were just people literally. It worked out in 1999. Broadband was not really a thing. You know? So the access just sucked. But now we have the access. It's super high speed. I used to say that once everybody has a connection the same speed as a CD-ROM, a single-speed CD-ROM is like 150 kilobytes per second. And now that's passé, right? Mobile phones can achieve that. The world changes at that point because you have really good, reliable access to the internet. And one of the nice things Facebook did for us, again, with the ambivalence, it's normal for people to be on the internet and be connected. It's like, oh, it's normal. I go to, you know, Facebook and I'm connected and I go to the internet and it's not scary. I can buy things. That's not scary. No creepy, you know, hooded ones and zeros are going to come by and steal my stuff.
Did you ever feel that these internet communities or some of them made us more lonely or prevented us from talking face-to-face? Or
no, I think it only unlocks more. I think it just, there's more talking to the point that there's actually too much talking, to be honest with you. More connection is good. I think some of the side effects, I guess what you're alluding to, and I do agree with this, is you see a lot of more perceived friction. Like, I think there's a lot more women online in the last 5 years than there used to be. So we're hearing a lot more about women's issues of, like, look at the shitty things that I have to deal with. And I'm like, because my friends and I were talking, like, God, you know, 5 years ago in the programming world, like, we just didn't talk about this. It didn't come up. And I think the difference is there's just more women online. And how can you really say that's a bad thing, right? Like, how's that bad? But it just means we hear more about the friction points. Because they're there. They're there to witness and talk about these friction points that they have. And I think that's a good thing. But I guess the downside is there is a certain mentality, like, of combat mentality, of, like, if it bleeds, it leads, where all you hear about is conflict.
Yeah.
Because that's what sells, right? And I don't know if that necessarily reflects the reality, and I guess I would look at BuzzFeed. At least BuzzFeed hasn't gone directly down that route. They're still about entertainment. They're not all about, you know, creating the Fox News scenario.
Right.
It's us versus them, and everybody's out to get us, and be afraid, be afraid, be afraid, and look how weird everyone else is.
Yeah.
I think you're going to hear, there's 1,000 channels. You know, where there used to be 3 channels or 10 channels, there's thousands, millions of channels. Some of those channels are going to be completely insane. People telling you stuff that just doesn't even make sense. That's why you see, like, the anti-science stuff, anti-vax, which is insane. But there's people that completely believe this stuff. There's websites you can go to that will explain to you, like, why vaccinations are bad.
Oh,
you should never be vaccinated, which, you know, again, crazy talk. Just super anti-science stuff. It's like everybody has a platform that anybody can get to now. I mean, the good thing is you have all these perspectives. The bad thing is that you have all these perspectives.
My fear is that it's not necessarily, like, is the crowd really, is it wisdom of the crowds, or is it, like, whoever's the loudest wins? Or whoever's the loudest, or whoever owns the distribution mechanism, or is buddies with the people who own the platforms, wins, as opposed to, like,
I think it's whoever comes up with the more
pure genius,
the more compelling story wins.
Interesting.
It's all about storytelling. If you have a really, really good story, and you're good at packaging your story, you are going to win. That can be good or bad. So I think that skill, which you see in, like, BuzzFeed is basically the rise of, like, packaging. We can just package all the stuff. I mean, BuzzFeed, half their articles are basically stuff they stole from Reddit, and put in a much nicer package and deliver it to people. And it's actually a better experience, right? Reddit is horrible from a UI perspective.
Yeah. It's almost like there's coming up with the story and then there's packaging it.
But packaging is the way to get forward, though. There's a lot of information to say.
Right.
So if you have 1,000 sites, the one that's packaging it the best and having the best story on it is going to win.
Right.
So that's the new art. And for people who are worried about this, you really need good bullshit detectors. You need to be good at, like, figuring out original sources, questioning the things that you're seeing from anyone, right? And how do you determine what's true and what's
false? I mean, is part of you scared about BuzzFeed, like, or you know, not super thrilled that BuzzFeed is taking over?
I think BuzzFeed is inevitable. Yeah. I don't really begrudge them what they do, and I think they've been reasonably responsible in the way that they do it.
Cool.
I mean, they were upfront, like, look, this is mostly entertainment, you know, we're not trying to be the authoritative state of X.
He's not trying to be New York Times, they're trying to be Disney.
They're evolving. Yeah, but to some extent they acknowledge, but look, this is primarily an entertainment media. This is more like, you know, Entertainment Weekly than the New York Times, right? That's okay. And there's a lot of room for different perspectives. I think it just implies that people need, like, the skill you should teach people is, like, there's all those things about, oh, we should teach young people how to code. I'm like, they don't need to know how to code. You know what they need to do? They need to know how to look at a domain name and see if the domain name looks freaky, right? Or, like, where is that domain name? They need to be able to read that page and question what's on it and look up things about it and figure out if it's actually valid or not. Those are the skills we need to be teaching our kids, not how to friggin' write a loop.
How do you call these skills? Internet literacy?
Basically, internet literacy. You're surrounded by information, 1,000 channels. How much of it is credible? And how much should you actually listen to? How much should you believe? What makes a credible source? Like, what do you look for? You know?
Yeah.
So I think those are the skills we want to teach people. You know, way more than programming. I mean, as much as, you know, programming is great and all, but, like, it's just not that essential.
When you...
How to write a good title for your email, for God's sake.
Yeah.
I mean, that's important.
Right. Yep. That's the new etiquette is email. When you see someone who wants to build a community like Stack or like Discourse, or, you know, a community that relies on systems, what do you look for in those people? Or what makes a great
builder? I think you have to have an audience of some kind. I mean, it always helps to be like Lady Gaga, right?
Yeah.
Or Radiohead. It's like, you're so famous, you have a built-in audience. That makes it really, really easy. The other thing that makes it easy is if you have sort of a culture around collaborative content, like Imgur did. It's a site where a bunch of people would come in and submit images, so it was user-generated content from the very beginning. Or if you have, like, a community of passionate sort of experts, like tax accountants or something.
Right.
You know? Where they have a lot of information to share, and they tend to hang out together. And just, you know, shared expertise. Like, if you have a site that's about, you know, bug crap, for example, another one of our customers is about bug bounties, you know? Now, that's a weird scenario, because there's this conflict of, like, you don't want the other people to get the bug bounty, but you do. So there's sort of a limit to how helpful you can be to everyone else, which is kind of weird, but still, I mean, it's good for them to share information about, like, you know, And if it fixes bugs, that's great. You know, yeah. Who am I to judge? You know, I'm uncomfortable about some aspects of that. But if more stuff gets fixed, that's a good thing. So I think you want to look for these central threads of, like, you know, are there really enough people gathering around this? Or is it just like an itinerant community where you never really see them? They do one thing and then they pass on to the next level. They're not really going to want to hang out there. Yeah. So I think those are the things you want to think about.
Cool. Thank you for taking the time to chat with me.
Yeah, it's great. I enjoyed it.
Discourse. Check it out.
Yeah, discourse.org.
And where can they find you on the internet?
Codinghorror.com.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeff.